Chapter 19, Taped for Trouble. Another scout leader moved into the cabin, followed by Scotty. Rick gave them a grin, then turned and picked up the gun behind Jan's chair. He stuck it in his pocket and untied the girl. The plastic cap was still on her head. He lifted it off gently and put it on top of the machine.
"Are you all right?" he asked.
She nodded, hand at her throat.
"Yes,"
she managed.
"Can't talk very well. The gag."
"Time for talking later," Rick said. He started for Barbie, but Scotty was already untying her. The moment her hands were free, she pulled the gag from her mouth and announced,
"Well, you took long enough getting here."
Rick didn't know what to say to that. He didn't have a chance to say anything. His sister rushed over, put her arms around him, and squeezed.
"You were wonderful. Scotty, he held the four of them at bay. I never knew you could fight like that, Rick Brandt."
Rick grinned. "I didn't do that much. You took one of them out of play by stomping on him. And Jan gave me an opening with as fine a kick as I've seen off a football field." The two Yannig agents had produced handcuffs, and the men and women were manacled together in a continuous chain. "Outside," one agent commanded. "Get into the pram."
"You got nothing on us," the man in the striped shirt protested. "We were only protecting ourselves against this wild man who barged in here."
"Yeah, and you were protecting yourself against the two girls, too, by tying them up?"
"We were holding them for the police," the striped shirt stated. "They sneaked aboard, probably intending to steal anything they could find. You're going to get yourselves in a whole lot of trouble, my friends. There's a law in this state against carrying firearms. A fine reputation this is going to give the Boy Scouts."
The agent with the pistol said mildly,
"You talk too much. Get in the pram."
To Rick he said, "We're taking him to Spindrift. We'll send the speedboat back for you." The four young people stood at the rail and watched as the crowded pram with its outboard motor chugged off to the island. Barbie pulled off her bathing cap, and Rick saw that she wore the Megabuck unit underneath. He pointed to it.
"I tried to call you. Why didn't you answer?"
Barbie replied with an embarrassed blush that started at the shoulders and swept up until her face was bright red.
"I forgot to turn it on. Jan reminded me while they were tying her up. They hadn't got to me yet. One of the women was holding the pistol and pointing it at me. Jan sort of looked up and said, 'We need an outside power to help us now, but we have to be sure the power is turned on.' Then I remembered. I pretended my head hurt and pushed the switch."
Rick looked at Jan. "That was clever. I've been trying to reach Barbie with no success, then suddenly I heard her talking."
"We knew you were close because we could hear the plane."
Jan shuddered.
"The men heard it too, because they ran out right after they tied us up and put that thing on my head. The women guarded us, and one of them had just started the machine running when the plane came right at us. We saw it through the open door, and we thought you were going to crash."
Rick grinned at Scotty. "That was our fast-acting pal. If he hadn't done that, I'd never have had a chance to get aboard."
"Good thing you figured out what I was doing," Scotty admitted. "When I saw you moving fast toward the boat, I knew it was okay, that I didn't have to crash."
Rick stared.
"You mean you'd actually have crashed?"
"Well, not head on, because that would have hurt the girls. But I was planning to swing at the last minute and try to knock the men off with my wing."
Rick could only mutter, "My sainted aunt."
Scotty turned on the girls.
"And here's the pair that made it necessary. What in the name of painted parsnip were you two trying to do?"
Barbie lifted her chin defiantly.
"We had a good plan. Can we help it if it didn't work?"
"Can't answer that until we know your plan," Scotty said reasonably. "Suppose you tell us."
"Well, we needed evidence that the houseboaters were in on the plot against our fathers, didn't we? I knew we could get it if we could plant a radio, so we made a plan."
"A lot of good a turned-off radio would have done us,"
Barbie glared.
"We decided we'd go swimming with the aqualungs. Then we'd come up right next to the houseboat, and we'd be so surprised. Of course, the people would come out to see us, Then we'd say I had a cramp. And could we please come up and rest for just a minute?
Rick listened. He had to admit it wasn't a bad plan at all, so far.
Of course they'd let us rest. Then I'd wait for a chance to put the radio behind a cushion or the crack of an armchair or somewhere like that. I didn't know exactly what I could do, but I knew if we could get aboard there, there had to be some way of leaving the radio behind.
The pram had vanished now around the turn of the cove. The speedboat would come into sight at any moment now. All right, Rick admitted. Let's say it was a good plan. What happened then? Jan took up the tale.
We didn't try to swim all the way from Spindrift, so we took the rowboat and did exactly what Captain Mike did yesterday. We rowed along the shore with the aqualungs and got into the water right where we could see the houseboat. We had to, otherwise we would have gotten lost underwater.
But you had wrist compasses, didn't you? Scotty asked. The boys had stressed that compasses were essential all the time, because low visibility in the waters off of the New Jersey shore made it very easy to lose one's sense of direction.
We had the compasses,
Barbie said.
How do you think we swam right to the houseboat?
Then why didn't you get into the water out of sight of the houseboat? Rick asked. And suddenly he knew. That would have meant plotting a compass course around a turn. So many feet in one direction, then change to another compass heading. He had explained it to them, but they hadn't learned it quite yet. It was not easy, he had to admit, and it took practice even on land. Never mind, I know the answer. Go ahead, tell us the rest. Barbie studied his face.
I guess you do know. Well, they told us later on the houseboat. They saw us get into the water, then they watched our bubbles come right up toward them. So when we got here, they weren't fooled. We went right through it, just like we'd planned,
Jan said.
And we thought we were getting away with it. They were very nice. Of course we could come up and rest. They were glad to have us stop by. But when we got aboard, one of the women had a gun, and she made us go into the cabin and sit down. Then they started asking us questions.
What kind of questions? Rick inquired.
About why we had come. We stuck to the story until they told us they'd seen us. Even then, we wouldn't admit anything. Then Bobby started to threaten them.
Scotty chuckled. I'd like to have heard that. Rick watched the tip of the cove. The speedboat from Spindrift should be arriving shortly. How about the plane? He asked suddenly. What did you do with it? Scotty motioned to the other side of the houseboat. It's anchored. I landed it next to the Yannick team and got into the rowboat with them. Skywagon carried a small anchor and a few yards of anchor line in one of the pontoons. Okay, great. All right, Barbie, go on. How did you threaten them?
I was very logical, wasn't I, Jan?
Jan nodded agreement.
Oh, you definitely were. I started by telling them they couldn't possibly do a thing to us and that they might as well just let us go.
Well, I bet that impressed them, Rick murmured.
Are you telling this or am I?
You are, Rick said contritely. Go on.
Well, I said my brother knew where we were, and they'd better be careful. It didn't work. Then I pointed out they didn't even dare to kill us, because our bodies could be traced back to the houseboat. Everyone knew we'd just gone for a swim, and everyone knew we could take care of ourselves.
Rick thought privately that any time Spindrift was in danger from then on, he'd make sure his self-reliant sister had a bodyguard at all times.
I said other things, too, but they finally slapped me and told me to shut up.
Who did? Scotty demanded.
One of the women. It doesn't matter, Scotty. It didn't hurt. Anyway, they said we could just stop worrying about what was going to happen to them. Then one of the men asked if we knew what happened to the three scientists. We said yes. Then he said...
Barbie turned white. Jan finished for her.
He said they were going to erase our minds too. Then they were going to put us back into the water.
The words were no sooner out than Jan had a delayed reaction too. Rick rushed the two of them into the cabin and made them sit down, heads bent low. Scotty found water and gave them each a drink.
You acted like a couple of champs, Rick told them. But for the love of Mike, please don't faint now.
Barbie lifted her chin.
I have no intention of fainting,
she said defiantly.
It's just...
I know, Rick assured her. Just take it easy, sis, okay?
He looked up. Finally, the sound of a racing speedboat was echoing inside the cabin.
Good.
They'd be home in a few minutes and his mother could take over. He gave the girls a comradely grin.
What a pair.
The machine on the table attracted his eye. He walked over to it and studied it. The recording drum had wavy lines on it, probably the beginning of Jan's brain pattern. It made no sense to him, but it would to Parnell Winston.
They had you taped, he told the girl gently, but you saved your own bacon by telling Barbie to turn on the radio. If you hadn't.
A shudder ran through Jan's slim body.
I was taped for trouble. I'm glad you came through the door when you did.
Rick's finger traced a line on the recording drum.
I'm kind of glad myself, he admitted.